ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवान् कार्यमानसा नात्रस्तेहं त्वया सर्वा समुद्रं याहि मा चिरं स्वज्ञात्यपत्यधारध्यो गोन्द्रभीर्भुञ्जते नदी। Shukadev Goswami said, after hearing Kaliya's words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is acting the role of a human being, replied, O serpent, you may not remain here any longer. Go back to the ocean immediately, accompanied by your retinue of children, wives, other relatives, and friends. Let this river be enjoyed by the cows and humans. Ya etat samsmarin maratyas tubhyam mad anushasanam kirtiyan ubhayo sandhyor na yasmad bhayam apnuyat. If a mortal being attentively remembers my command to you to leave Vrindavan and go to the ocean and narrates this account at sunrise and sunset, he will never be afraid of you. Yosmin snatva madakridhe deva dims tarapayej jalai ubosya mam smaran archet sarva papai pramuchate. If one bathes in this place of my pastimes and offers the water of this lake to the demigods and other worshipable personalities, or if one observes a fast and duly worships and remembers me, he is sure to become free from all sinful reactions. Purport. According to the Acharyas, the Lord spoke this verse to make it clear to Kaliya that he could by no means remain in the Jamuna lake. Although the Lord had mercifully pardoned the serpent and ordered him to go to the ocean with all his associates, Kaliya should not even consider requesting to remain in the lake, because it was now to become a holy place for spiritual pilgrims. Vipam ramanakam hitva Pradam etam upashata yad bhayat sa suparanastvam nadyan mat padandanchitam. Out of fear of Garuda, you left Ramanaka Island and came to take shelter of this lake. But because you are now marked with my footprints, Garuda will no longer try to eat you. Sri Rishi Uvacha Mukto bhagavata rajan krishnena bhuta karmana tam bhujayam asamudha nagapatnyas chatusadasram. Shukadev Goswami continued, my dear king, having been released by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities are wonderful, Kaliya joined his wives in worshipping him with great joy and reverence. Report. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on this verse. The word Adbhuta Karmana indicates the Lord's wonderful activities of saving the inhabitants of Vrindavan from Kaliya, saving Kaliya himself from Garuda, and bestowing grace upon both the victims of the violence and the committer of the violence. The word Krishnena by Krishna indicates that because Kaliya's wives were great devotees of the Lord and offered him loving with affection, Krishna withdrew both Kaliya's offense against the Lord's devotee Garuda and that against the residents of Vrindavan, who were very dear to him. Hare Krishna. Kaliya Daman is demonstrating how he fulfills his promise of the Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion of Gita, Sarvadharman Parityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Yishami Masucha. Krishna says, you abandon all varieties of religion and you surrender to me. I shall relieve you of all sinful reactions. You have nothing to fear. Just as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his causeless mercy, bestowed the highest and purest state of consciousness to Jagai and Madhai when he surrendered. Similarly, Lord Sri Krishna is bestowing such a benediction upon Kaliya. The parallels of the story are wonderful. Kaliya, due to his conditioned nature, due to the influence of the three modes of nature upon him, was wicked, cruel, envious, violent, and angry. And so many offenses he committed to the Vaishnavas. First, he committed a great offense against Garuda by stealing his property. With great arrogance and pride, he thought that I will conquer Garuda, I will destroy him. You see, all offenses to the Vaishnavas are born of pride. If you are humble, you cannot offend a Vaishnava. Even if you make a mistake, even if you transgress the etiquette of Vaishnavism, if it is done just out of foolishness, but you are in the mood of a humble servant, Krishna will not consider that offense. He will simply send someone to correct you, and that's all there is of it. But if out of arrogance, out of pride, you offend a Vaishnava, Krishna will not tolerate it. If for any motivation that offense is performed, Krishna will smash us. And the only way to be atoned for that offense is to surrender to the Lord and his devotees. So here is this Kaliya. Actually, he had great, great opulence and tremendous qualifications. Because everyone, according to the particular society they're living in, there's certain things that are respected. Just like amongst athletes, whoever has the biggest muscles and whoever can run the fastest and whoever can beat up everyone else is considered something very special and very great. But if you put that same person in a society of Brahmins, they will just think he's a low-class fool. Nobody will give him any respect or recognition, right? At the same time, if you take a nice, skinny little brahmachari like Tattva, who's just learned in the Shastra and always a humble servant, and you put him in a room of politicians, they'll think this guy's useless, right? But if you put all those politicians in the room of nice brahmacharis, they'll think these people are totally in maya. So we're respected according to the society we're in. So Kaliya was in a society of snakes. So what do they recognize? Snakes are envious. Snakes, everyone wants to be the best. So whoever could defeat all others and subjugate others by your control, whoever is the biggest, the most hoods, and the largest stock of poison, that person is considered the greatest of the snake. And everyone pays their dandavat pranams to him. So Kaliya was, he had 1,000 hoods. 101 were prominent. And he was so massive in size, and he had such a stock of poison in him that just his breathing would kill anyone that came near him. So amongst the snakes, he was considered like an acharya. He was a Mahajan amongst the snakes. So because of this opulence, he became very proud, very arrogant. And due to his arrogance, due to his being very much accustomed to being respected by everyone around, he was thinking, I can do anything. I am a specially empowered soul, and no one can defeat me. And pride makes one so intoxicated that one cannot even see the reality around him. So the great bird carrier Garuda, all of the other snakes, they very much respected Garuda. They knew he is the carrier of Vishnu. He is a great Vaishnava. He wants to eat snakes. We have to give him. We have to put it on altar. But Kaliya was thinking, who is this nonsense Garuda? He is nothing compared to me. I am better than him. I will take what belongs to him. And undoubtedly he will come to fight me, and then I will destroy him. Such an offensive mentality. He wanted to steal the property of a Vaishnav, and then on top of that, kill him? But of course, Garuda easily defeated him. And Kaliya, he had to run to this place, this lake in Vrindavan, where he was given shelter due to the curse of Sobari Muni. So there's one Vaishnavapara. And then what is the next Vaishnavapara? Every resident of Brajbhumi is a Vaishnav. The birds, the insects, the fish, everyone. They are all Nitya Siddha, Paramhamsas. And every bird that would fly overhead, he would emit vapors that would kill those birds and they would drop dead. And then Krishna's closest associates, the cowherd boys, they came to drink the water from that lake. And due to the poison, they all died. They all dropped unconscious in a lifeless state. Lord Sri Krishna was thinking, who could be more offensive than this? Fighting Vaishnavas, killing Vaishnavas? What to speak of ordinary living beings? What to speak of polluting the ecology? You know, the ecologists, they are very much rampant in this day and age in regard to the necessity of cleansing the ecology. But you can imagine what an offender to the earth Kaliya was. Utter pollution. He was just offensive toward everyone and everything. He was the embodiment of sin, envy, greed, lust, pride. But he had one qualification. He only had one qualification in his entire life. And that was that his wives were devotees and they were praying for his welfare. And the prayers of the Vaishnavas never go in vain. If a Vaishnav prays for someone's welfare, Krishna will give that person special mercy. And because of the loving prayers of the Nagapatnis, Krishna decided, I must show my special mercy to this Kaliya. So he jumped in the lake. And of course, Naham Prakash Sarvasya Yoga Maya Samavrata Mudo Yamna Bijanati Lokomam Ajam Avyayam. Krishna says that those who are foolish and unintelligent, I cover myself with the potency of Maya. They cannot understand who I am or what is the truth. Avajananti ma mudha manusham paramashutam param bhavam ajanantam mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools, they cannot understand my supreme nature, my transcendental position, because they are envious. Therefore I blind them, I cover them with Maya. They see everything ordinary. They see everything material. They see everything as an object of exploitation. So when Krishna, he climbed on that very high and beautiful Kadamba tree, and he tightened his belt, and he stretched his arms to prepare for a good match, then he jumped in the lake. And when he jumped in the lake, although this lake was 8 miles wide, and it was so full of poison and pollution, still, and Krishna was just a tiny little boy. He was just a little child. But yet, the whole lake, just the waves just grew and overflooded because of Krishna, that little boy jumping in. Mahato mahiyan anato aniyan. Krishna wants to show I am bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. Even in my smallest size, I can be the heavier than the heaviest. If you dropped a mountain in the lake, it would not have had such a tumultuous effect as if this little tiny child jumped in. That is Krishna's mystic power. And Kaliya, he was living on the bottom of that lake. And he was a great mystic yogi too. He was such a mystic yogi that according to the acharyas, he was able to construct an entire civilization out of water. He had beautiful palaces. Beautiful, beautiful facilities for enjoyment. He built an entire city at the bottom of that lake, where he was living in tremendous luxury and opulence with his queens, the Nagapatnis, and his children, and his servants. And there was one thing that he could not tolerate. Nobody was allowed to touch that lake. Around the lake there were snake holes with other snakes, very venomous, poisonous snakes who were guarding it. But no one was allowed in that lake except for he and his most confidential associates. And no one dared. This is the mentality of one who is conditioned by pride, is they are thinking, Janasya mohoya mahamameti, that I am this body and all things in relationship to this body are mine. And no one but me has the right to enjoy them. And such a person is always thinking that because I have the best of everything, everyone is envious of me. Everyone wants what I have. Therefore, I must defend, I must protect. It's like the nations of this world. They all have their big, big armies to defend the land that they call their own. So Kaliya, he considered, this lake is mine, and unless you get proper visa by getting my permission, no one enters. But Krishna just entered. He was illegal immigrant. He just jumped in. He didn't get any visa. He didn't get any permission, no sanction. He just jumped in. And Kaliya became, who is this nonsense? Who dares to do this? No one has ever done. That person must die, whoever he may be. What to speak of coming in? He's creating such a commotion. Kaliya came up and he saw this little beautiful little boy. And when Kaliya saw this child, even this great demon was so attracted. His heart was filled with affection and attraction, such beauty. Such charm I have never seen. But nevertheless, he has transgressed my rules. He must die. So the first thing Kaliya did is he bit Krishna in the chest. And then he put his mighty, mighty coils around Krishna's body to strangle him. And when the residents of Vrindavan saw Krishna in that condition, they thought, our love, our only purpose of life, our only goal, our friend, he is about to die. And Krishna appeared lifeless. The residents of Vrindavan did not know if he was dead or alive. The cowherd boys were falling unconscious in grief. Nanda, Jashoda, and the cowherd men, they came running. They were about to just jump in the poisonous lake and just start hitting Kaliya with whatever they could, even though they knew there was nothing. They were willing to just die for Krishna. With Balaramji, he said, no, no, you do, stay back. Some of them, he said, no, no, you stay. Some he had to physically push to keep them from diving in the Jamuna. Balaram knew. Balaram was thinking, Krishna, why are you so merciful? I am Sheshanag, I am a snake. Krishna never lets me serve him as a serpent in this incarnation, but he's letting this demon do what I'm supposed to be doing. So he was just thinking, he was just amused by the whole thing, knowing that Krishna is supreme. But the Brijvasis, Mother Jashoda, she fell unconscious like a cow that lost her calf. And for hours upon hours, Krishna was in that condition, and you can imagine the situation. Not knowing whether he will live or die. So you can imagine the condition of Kaliya around Krishna, how the Brijabasis were looking. Here is this terrible, terrible serpent. He was huge, like mountain. He had 1,000 hoods, fierce, fierce, ferocious eyes. It said that his eyes were emitting venom. Just by him looking at someone, you would die from the venom of his glance. This is how ferocious of a creature this was. And here is Krishna. Mother Jashoda, Nanda Maharaj, the cowherd men, the cowherd girls, when they would embrace Krishna, Krishna was soft like butter. Really? He would practically melt in the arms of the older cowherd men and cowherd women when they embraced him. Because he was so fond of eating butter, his body was like butter. So soft, so helpless. The gopis, when Krishna would step on a little pebble on the ground, their hearts would ache, thinking, Krishna's foot, it's so soft, he just stepped on a stone, it must hurt him. Can you imagine what they were thinking when the terrible fangs of his teeth were biting him in the chest and he was wrapped up around coils? So the love of the Lord just swelled infinitely in the hearts of the Brijbasis. And when Krishna saw that they were just about to die, they just could not survive in this anxiety any longer, then Krishna, he slipped out of the coils of Kaliya, and with his hands he pushed down his head, and then he jumped upon his head and began to dance. Such wonderful dance. He began to dance upon dance. And as he was dancing, the ferocious heads of Kaliya were looking. His bifurcated tongues were coming in and out. His eyes were just red in anger. He was hissing. Such a hiss. It was making a tumultuous sound, filling the entire atmosphere. And he was just trying to bite Krishna, trying to eat Krishna, trying to destroy Krishna in every way. All of these 1,000 heads were attacking him at the same time. And every time a head would come near Krishna, he would just jump on that head and start dancing. And as it's explaining, he was dancing so artistically, so beautifully. It wasn't like it appeared that he was fighting. Today, when warriors are in the battlefield, or when a fighter is in the arena, they don't look graceful, they just look savage. But Krishna was just dancing so sweetly, so nicely, smiling. And as he was dancing, his feet were just moving so softly as he was floating in the air. But every time his little tiny foot would touch the head of Kaliya, it was like a mighty thunderbolt crashing into his skull, through his brain and through his whole body. In this way, as Krishna was dancing on each hood, that hood would just start vomiting blood. Just all the poison just started coming out like anything. He became delirious. Then he went to the next hood, and then to the next. Till all the poison of this snake, by Krishna's dancing, just he vomited it all out. He was finished with his poison. He was in such a painful condition. At that time, his poison was his strength. He was utterly defeated. He was powerless. He was in a completely weakened state on the verge of death. And all he could do was just look upon Krishna. just ready to die. And at that time, the Nagapatnis, they appeared on the scene. And they were very much merciful to him. At first, they were thinking, as Krishna was dancing on Kaliya, they were thinking, Jai Ho, Krishna's going to kill him. Then we can become widows, and as widows, we can just chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We can chant the glories of the Lord, we can do nice pujas, we can have nice seva amongst ourselves, we have a nice satsang of Nagapatnis. Nagapatni Bhakti Samaj. We'll have a nice group, and like this. So let him die. Very good. But then they saw that as when he became completely humbled and totally hopeless, he actually started to take shelter of Krishna. He was actually taking shelter of them. And they were thinking, oh, he has become a Vaishnava. This is wonderful. And then they began to pray, Krishna, you are so merciful. Even Brahma and Shiva, and even the greatest rishis and saints, they are performing great tapasya, meditation, fasting, doing so many things, just in the hope that in some future birth they will get the dust of your feet on their head. Even one particle of dust is the perfection of their life. But this wicked, envious serpent, Kaliya, so merciful you are, that with those same feet that are the goal and the refuge of all living entities, you are simply dancing upon him, bestowing such kindness. But now, my Lord, because he has been sufficiently purified by the dust of your lotus feet, now he is a great Vaishnav. Please be merciful to him. And beside, he is our husband, and we require, as chaste and faithful wives, we require his protection. So please be kind upon him. And on the basis of the prayers of the Nagapatnis, Krishna, ah yes, very good. And he jumped off of Kaliya's heads. While he was dancing on Kaliya, it was really a wonderful, wonderful display. All the demigods came down and started playing mridangas and different instruments just to give nice beat for Krishna to dance to. Just like you know in kirtan, when Satyavrat or Tattva plays mridanga, everybody, that beat just makes everyone dance very nicely. Huh? So they wanted Krishna to dance with accompaniment, so they were playing nice rhythms for him to dance. But after this wonderful, beautiful, artistic, dramatic performance, he jumped down, and Kaliya, at this time, he was so much grateful to Krishna for his mercy. He didn't know anything about offering prayers to the Lord, but he heard his wives pray, and basically what he did is he just repeated their prayers, because he heard submissively. This is the perfection of life, simply to hear submissively from the great devotees and then repeat what they say with honesty and sincerity. So he did like this. And through this process, sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam braj aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masacha. Because he surrendered to Krishna by the grace of the Nagapatnis, Krishna said, now you are purified of all your sins. You have nothing to fear. You have abandoned everything and surrendered to me. Kaliya was not a great Brahmin. What was his qualification? He simply surrendered to Krishna. He was the lowest possible caste. He was a snake. Huh? He had no qualifications for spiritual life. He was the lowest of the low in every respect, but he surrendered to Krishna. Sarva dharman purityajya. And even the great Garuda, who vowed to kill him because of his offense, Krishna said, you have no fear of Garuda, because he will see your footprints, my footprints on your head, he will not touch you. In fact, no one will harm you. In fact, Srila Prabhupada and the great Acharya say Kali is still living near the island of Fiji. And he's a great Vaishnava. With his thousand hoods and mouths, always chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how do we relate this to the story of Jagai and Madhai? There are many parallels. One is, although he was the most sinful of all sinners and even offender against the Vaishnavas, because a great devotee prayed on their behalf, the Lord was merciful and saved them. Because Nityananda Prabhu prayed on their behalf, because the Nagapatnis prayed on his behalf, the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was merciful. And when they saw that not only was the prayers there, but they were sufficiently purified, Jagai and Madhai were very much, they were frightened to death seeing the Sudarshan Chakra about to destroy them. They became humble and they surrendered. By the grace of the Vaishnavas, they surrendered. And after they surrendered, the Supreme Lord said, now you are relieved of all offenses. In the story of Jagai and Madhai, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to prove to all the devotees that Jagai and Madhai, however sinful they were, they are free from all sin. You must respect them as perfect Vaishnavas now. And he said, to prove this to you, because they have surrendered to me, and because they have become dear to Lord Nityananda, I will take all their sins upon myself now. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's body became pitch black. His beautiful golden form became black like coal, because all the sins of Kali and of Jagai and Madhai came into him. And he said, now what is my condition? Only if the devotees, the only relief from sins in this age of Kali Yuga is the congregational chanting of the Lord's holy name. Namas, what is that? Tasmad sankirtanam yasya jagan mangalamang hasam mahatam apikoravya vijay kantikra niskritam. That the chanting, the congregational chanting of the holy names is the supreme, most auspicious of all spiritual practices. It invokes complete auspiciousness wherever it is chanted, and it purifies one of all sins. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you see, now I am full of all these sins. Chant the holy names. It is the only hope. So then they all had big kirtan, and through the kirtan of the holy name, all his complexion again became beautiful golden color. So in this way, the Lord, for those who surrender to him and surrender to his holy name, he takes all sins and relieves them of all fear. Now, Kaliya, this is the only place on earth you're allowed to stay because of fear. Now you can go anywhere. Go into the big vast ocean. Make it your home. You have nothing to fear. But you cannot stay here, because this is a place where my cows, they will be frightened to see you, these little cowherd boys and cows. Even if you were a good Vaishnav, still you're a big snake. Too frightening for the Brijbasi, so you must leave Vrindavan. Huh? So he left. He left a pure devotee of the Lord, liberated. Sarabhadharaman purityaja, mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masucha. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to me. Krishna says, I will deliver you of all sins and you never have anything to fear again for the rest of eternity. And then Krishna explains here that if a mortal being attentively remembers my command to you to leave Vrindavan and go to the ocean, and narrates this account at sunrise and sunset, he will never be afraid of you. In other words, just the story, the sound vibration, has all the power and all the potency of the mercy that Krishna gave to Kaliya. Whatever mercy he gave to Kaliya, that same mercy is within the sound vibration of this story. Krishna says, anyone who remembers attentively this beautiful narration will be free of all fear, will be free of all sins. And he says, if one bathes in this place of my pastimes and offers the water of this lake to the demigods and other worshipable personalities, or if one observes a fast and duly worships and remembers me, he is sure to become free from all sinful reactions. Here the Lord is explaining the importance of holy places, of pilgrimage. At each place where he performs these wonderful leelas, he especially leaves within that particular place the divine grace of that leela. And one who approaches such a place in such a state of mind, hearing and remembering, will attain great, 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 tremendous purification. And of course, it is explained by Maharaj Yudhisthira, Bhavadvida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibhu Kirtna Tirtha Kuravanti Tirthani Swantastena Gadabrata. That all the holy places of pilgrimage are in the lotus feet of the great devotees. Why? Because they're always glorifying Krishna and his leela and his names, and the sound vibration is none different than the place. So all those holy places of pilgrimage, which are none different than the sound vibration of their glories, because they are always being chanted by the pure devotees, factually all holy places are within his lotus feet. This is how we can understand this verse. And because he is always remembering Krishna within the core of his heart, because Krishna is always performing his leela in his heart, therefore that person's body is Vrindavan itself, the residence of Sri Krishna, the abode of Sri Krishna. So in this way, by learning how to receive the mercy of the Lord's great devotees, and by learning with faith the greatness of Krishna, that if we simply surrender to him with all humility in a helpless and humble state of mind, then all fear, all sin, whoever we are, whatever we've done, is removed. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you're saying about this pride. Actually, the problem is this way, that we can go in material life. If at all we made any progress or something, pride comes, it's okay to some extent because we don't have this association. But even in spiritual life, when we come, even we make some little bit of progress in spiritual life, that pride enters in our mind, and grossly we think that we are doing some services, we are reading Bhagavatam, we are listening to Bhagavatam class, we are serving the devotees, and grossly we feel it that nothing is going wrong. But in subtly we know it, that we feel it that we are doing something better than other. And because we are doing something better than other, I am much more powerful and much more higher way compared to other people. And in that circumstances, instead of advancing in spiritual life, we are somewhat coming down from spiritual life because Krishna doesn't accept that thing. Now, this is a completely critical juncture because we feel that we are advancing in spiritual life, and on the contrary, we are not advancing, we are coming down. So sometimes we feel that we should not advance altogether because Krishna is not accepting that thing. So how to come out of that full crunch itself, because we are completely in a subtle level that pride is not going altogether. And we feel it that we are serving the devotees, we are reading Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, we are reading to Bhagavatam, and that is, we are already humble this way, but inside it is not going. So how to see that full, that circle itself, we should come out of it.
By the chanting of the holy name, by the hearing of the Bhagavat, by rendering devotional service, all of this pride is removed, providing that is our motive for performing these devotional activities. You must, in your devotional activities, you must assume the position of a humble servant, And you must, if you desire prestige and recognition, Krishna will give you that. But he's just giving you enough rope to hang yourself. Therefore, we must, by hearing properly, by hearing sincerely, we are constantly reminded that our position is to only aspire for the Das, 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 Anu Das. Our aspiration, our goal of life is to attain the lowliest servant mentality at the feet of the Vaishnavas. Naivadmatis tavara rukramangrin sprishatyana tha pagamo yadartha mahiyasam padara jobhishekam iskinchananam navrinita yavat. Prahlad Maharaj said, the aspiration of a devotee is simply to attain the dust of the feet of Vaishnavas. Huh? That's all. And by hearing properly and chanting the holy names properly, you will aspire for that. We must aspire for that. Should be the goal of our chanting. That should be what we are longing for. That should be what we are praying for. And if that is our desire, Krishna will quickly fulfill it. If you're hearing submissively, all the shastra is, practically from the beginning to the end, is how the demoniac creature of pride must be destroyed. It's through every demon that the Lord is killing, and all of his incarnations are just embodiments of this pride. And every devotee is humble like the grass. So how could we hear these things and be content with our arrogance? So we must simply strive to be the servant of the Vaishnavas and perform our sadhana in that state, and then you don't have to worry. Krishna will bring you back to Godhead without fail. But if you're doing your sadhana and you're thinking, I will get a position, I will get a recognition, it will take long, long time for you to be purified. If you're striving for the service of the Vaishnavas, striving for a humble position, striving for that trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnana state of consciousness, if that is your goal, Krishna will quit, and you're performing your sadhana and your bhajan and your seva with that goal in mind, Krishna will give you that. This is why, some people, they think this raganuga sadhana, that a neophyte devotee, if he's meditating on the Manjari Bhava of Radha and Krishna, thinking, but by meditating on this, I will attain that state. This is all illusion. This is all imagination. Until you become completely freed from any trace of ego, envy, or lust, this is all imagination. If you're striving for that, you'll simply be contaminated. The first thing you have to strive for is simply to be like a blade of grass at the feet of the Vaishnavas and Guru and Krishna. That's what we should be striving for. If we strive for that, Krishna will be pleased. Then when we attain that state by his mercy, then he gives us entrance into all these higher levels of consciousness. Otherwise we think, oh, just see, I am meditating on something so high. Huh? The highest thing is Gopi Bhara Tupada Kamalayora Das Das Anu Das. That is real Vaishnav Siddhanta. Nothing higher than that. Because only in that state does Krishna open the doors to the higher realizations of bhakti. Any other questions?
How to understand, how we can understand that whether this is pride or it is service to Krishna,
otherwise one can become Babaji also. And that is also pride, that I keep myself away from everything, because otherwise it will be considered like that. So how to understand, is it service or is it pride? One may be thinking, I am serving.
You must, if you are humble, you will perform the service that you are given. Huh? But you will do it with the ambition that by performing this humble service, I will become free of pride. I will become a servant. It is your motive. It's not the service you render, it's the motivation. You have to do your service. If you're not obedient, then you're not humble. Right? You have to perform your service. If someone tells you, go to do the Sankirtan and collect Lakshmi for the temple. If you're told to do that, and you're thinking, oh, if I collect a lot of money, then I will become proud, so better I just go to Vrindavan and be a Baba. Proper satsanga Vaishnavas, our motive for why we're doing our service becomes transformed. If everyone around us is aspiring for humility and devotional service, whatever pride we have, we feel contaminated by it, right? But if everyone's proud, bragging about what they do, and if we're in those people's association, then we feel very comfortable and very well-nourished with our pride. You have done this, you have done this, you have done this. Well, you know what I have done? I have done like this. Ah, you have done like this. Well, I've done. Ah, well, you think, oh, I'm right up there with the big guns. If you're with that association, it just nourishes and feeds your pride. But if you're in the association of humble people who never talk anything good about themselves, they're always just glorifying others, then as soon as you start talking good about yourself, you just feel contaminated. Uh-huh. You think, my God, I'm really fallen. It's a fact. So therefore, if you want to be humble, you have to seek out the association of devotees who are striving for humility. And then naturally, your motivation for humble service will be properly directed. Otherwise, you know, we become completely, all this distinction and positioning and all these things, it's so contaminated when we're striving for that. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayara Dast. We only strive to be the servant of the servant of the servant. Two people are doing the same things, but what is our motivation? That is the difference between pride and humility. Any other questions?
Maharaj, when Durvas Muni offended Maharaj Ambarish, and when he surrendered to God, God said, first you should go and ask forgiveness from devotee. And here, in this case, God has forgiven him. And why there is a difference? Kaliya surrenders, God forgives here. He had offended Garuda.
Because Kaliya was in a position like Jagai and Madhai. Jagai and Madhai, it was not possible for them to ask forgiveness for everyone that they offended, because they offended everyone. But because they were taking shelter of the Lord, they were surrendering to the Lord, on the basis of the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Naturally, Madhai, after he did this, he was just so much morose. He was the most miserable person in the entire creation because he felt so terrible about all the people that he offended. Even after he got all this mercy, even after he was purified completely, he said, still, I've committed so many offenses to so many people. Nityananda Prabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told, you build a bathing ghat as a seva so all the people could bathe in the Ganges, and whoever comes you must offer your prostrated obeisances and prayers to. Mm-hmm. We because you don't know who you've offended and who you've not offended. You did it all in such a drunken state. So Kaliya, you were such an envious serpent, intoxicated with so much poison and pride, he offended all of everyone. Huh? So the Lord, by his special mercy, he didn't just offend one person, he offended everyone. Purified him. Knowing that in his purified state he would become humble to everyone. So that was the Lord's... He was so offensive that it was his only salvation that the Lord just give him that liberation. Because he surrendered. Any other questions?
Maharaj, when the pride has not gone from our heart, we know it that something is wrong inside. And in between, some devotees or some congregation people, they try to praise you. And because that pride has not gone from our heart, that praise that comes in our from some people, at that time, that directly goes in our heart itself, and we feel it that we are somewhat great enough. And in that juncture, how to counteract that praise, or how to see to it that there is nothing wrong, means I am not at all, this is completely useless. How to see to it that that thing doesn't affect our heart, because at that time we are fallen down. So how to see that praise that comes, at that time we are not in a humble state of consciousness, how to see that that doesn't affect our consciousness and we go smoothly in our spiritual life?
You should know that if it was not for the instruction of Guru Maharaj, you could not be doing anything. So therefore, it is the greatness of Guru Maharaj who is giving me the instruction, the direction and the strength to do these things. It is not my greatness. It is the greatness of Krishna coming through Guru. They deserve the credit. And we should become humbled and grateful. That whatever he is praising me, Guru is so great, he's allowing me to take the credit for what he's doing. Krishna's giving me credit for what I'm doing. That should make you more humble for what he's doing. A devotee, when he's praised, doesn't get proud, he becomes humble. When a devotee is praised by someone, he's thinking, my God, I'm so unqualified, I'm so undeserving, what am I doing? If only that person knew what type of contamination was in my heart, he wouldn't be praising me, he would be vomiting on my face. If he only knew what was inside. That's the way a devotee thinks when he's praised. He becomes more humble by it. And we should be praying when we're being praised. Please, please Guru Maharaj, please Krishna. It is all your grace, it is all your mercy. We should tell that person, it is all the mercy of Guru and Krishna. I am nothing. We should say like that. And we should feel like that. And besides that, everyone knows what a puffed up rascal you are. They're just trying to encourage you. But everyone knows you're just a rascal. Always seeking prestige. Always thinking, I will do this and become recognized. Everyone knows that about you. But out of their causeless mercy, the Vaishnavas are trying to encourage you to do better. We should think like that. Is it true? Any other questions? Thinking, oh, I know all these big people, and I have such spiritual emotions, and I'm so good in my business, and yet I'm still such a staunch Vaishnava, and I do so much tapasya. No one has ever done what I am doing, coming all the way every morning. I'm a very great soul. Everyone knows that you are just a rascal, a neophyte devotee. He thinks he's so great. He has really no good qualifications. But by the mercy of all these kind devotees, they're trying to encourage you to become something like a devotee in this life. Huh? That's the way you should think.